Lights, camera, action, folks. Murray throws. Touchdown, Arizona. DeAndre Hopkins. Quarterback draw. Murray, can he get there? Touchdown. Perfect.
Welcome to episode 147 of the British Bird Gang Breakdown. And we've done zero preparation for this episode, so maybe it's a shit show, maybe it isn't, who knows. But as always, I'm Tom, and I'm joined by Callum to break down Arizona Cardinals news and whatever else we want to talk about for however long we want to talk about.
Hi, Tom. I'm figuring that in a very kind of Arizona Cardinals way, given that we're sort of winging it here with no preparation, that we start off really, really slow and basically get nothing done for the first quarter or so of the podcast, and then we'll kind of pick up after that point.
I mean, that's a good idea because, you know, we do have some news to kick off with this week, news which actually broke probably about half an hour after we finished recording last week.
If that, I remember we finished recording, we had a little chat, and then I like looked at my phone and people were texting me about it because they knew just how heartbroken that we would be as hosts of this podcast.
And it's terrible, terrible news that, you know, we could have had like an almost live reaction to, but, you know, we decided to hold off just that little bit longer.
Just that little bit longer. Yeah, indeed. This week we're talking about our favorite memories, our best moments of Andy Isabella as an Arizona Cardinals, because he was released last week.
He was, yeah. Tuesday last week, around about 9 o'clock sort of time, our time. And it was like, yep. And that was the end of that, you know. I mean, so many fans just hated the guy from the get-go just because, you know. I mean, not really from the get-go because he was like, didn't actually see him play, but like, as the season started and, you know, he never got to play, but other wide receivers who were drafted after him did. I'm not going to mention any names because you know the names by now. But it's like, yeah, they got to play and Isabella just sat on the sidelines doing nothing. And then, you know, it just seemed to go that way throughout his stay in Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, I'd be very hard-pressed to find you specific moments and specific plays that he was, you know, instrumental in, let's say. I know he played a bit more on special teams than he did on like the main offense, and he had a few catches here and there.
Yeah, I mean, he had like the 2-touchdown game against Detroit, I think, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. And then he also had that, is it 79-yard touchdown against San Francisco?
Oh yeah, the big one.
Yeah, so you know, there were highlights in there, just nowhere near enough. But then again, he wasn't used anywhere near enough that you'd hope a second round draft selection would be. And whatever that reason was, you know, we'll never know.
Especially considering some of the guys that were drafted around him, you know, approximately the same time. You know, he's definitely sort of an epitome of one of those Steve Keim picks that, you know, just doesn't seem to go anywhere.
Yeah, but it was one of these things, like we saw, everyone's seen the videos now, you know, of Cliff Kingsbury saying, you know, he really likes Andy Isabella, you know, he makes us great straight away. And it was like, he says that, but then never actually uses a guy.
Yeah, yeah, just keeps him on the sidelines for however many years. How many years is that now? 3? 2?
This would have been his 3rd year. You know,
yeah,
he'd been out of contract at the end of this year, so.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is all to do with a lot of the shuffling that we were talking about with the practice squads at the end of last week. You know, the seats needed to become free, and that's where they ended up becoming free.
Yeah, I mean, we also have, like, injuries elsewhere, which obviously brought around the change because we needed to bring in an offensive lineman, and he did in Billy Price, a guy who could play corner, clearly can't play corner because he's an offensive lineman.
Yeah,
center and guard. He can play.
And yeah, they brought him in as guard for this week. And, you know, there's just basically an awful lot of roster shuffling. I mean, hell, we had to bring in a new kicker, which I don't know if we'll do the news about that as well. But
I mean, the less we talk about that guy, the better.
Well, exactly. Well, we're going to have to talk about him later on in the game review. But anyway, regardless, you know, someone had to fall off this roster. And as we talked about, kind of wide receiver is the obvious place to do that with this squad as they are just now, because they're just so, I'm not going to say stacked at wide receiver, because that implies that like it's full of talent, but just a lot of depth in that room, you know, a lot of bodies. And therefore, that's kind of where it made sense to cut.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a certain guy coming back after this next game. So,
yeah,
we've got to make room for him.
Exactly. So I think, you know, it just made sense at the time. But obviously, I think on this podcast, we've had both both joking and serious, you know, like for the guy. And so, yeah, I'm sad to see him go. I think it's a shame.
Yeah, I mean, I've never had anything bad. Like, there's never been anything bad to said about him, you know, like from the coaches or anything like that. You know, it's just wrong situation at the wrong time, basically, for him. Because, I mean, he hasn't yet connected with another team. I mean, there was rumours that he was going to sign with the Baltimore Ravens last week, but apparently that never happened.
I think that he's too good to disappear completely into the woodwork, and I think there's a good chance that we're going to see him at some point, somewhere. I don't think he's going to do that thing which you see some players do, which is, you know, turn a mediocre career at one team into a starring role at another. But I could see him going into another team and kind of doing what he did with us. But he really just didn't get his shot.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's sad to see him go because, you know, that's a second round pick basically wasted. But again, it was a second round pick we got from the Dolphins, who wasted Josh Rosen after they picked him. So it kind of evens out.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, very kind of odd circularity, really, with all of that, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, obviously, like I say, we've not seen him go elsewhere just yet, but I'm keeping a hold of him in fantasy just in case he does, because
yeah,
I wasted that first round selection.
So we'll keep an eye out for Andy Watch in the coming weeks, shall we?
Yeah, I mean, it won't be as good as like Aaron Washington or anything like that back in the day, but
no, know, maybe
we'll see what
we
can do.
Won't have its own theme song. But yeah, other news with the Cardinals, I guess, pertinent to the game that came up. It was confirmed after last week that Matt Prater's injury was going to keep him out for this entire week. And they needed to come in and get another kicker signed ASAP.
Yeah, but maybe we'll talk about him during the game, because we have some actual news which we could probably talk about before we get into the game recap.
All right, what story is this one?
Well, I mean, we saw the news earlier today that the Carolina Panthers sacked their head coach, Matt Rhule, after we beat them the other week. So he's out the door, and a person that we know pretty well on this podcast is now their interim head coach.
Yeah, I think it's a tough old time. I mean, Matt Rhule's had a pretty dreadful run with the Panthers. He's had about a 30% win rate across 2.5 years. Obviously, a bunch of that win rate comes with victories against us, but we're able to go in there and beat them hard enough the other week that they've decided to part ways with Matt Rhule and instead install
Steve Wilks.
Wilks.
I mean, come on.
Wow.
Really?
Wow. What a tough decision you're going to have to make to chuck. How bad does somebody have to be doing before you give Steve Wilks a go at being a head coach again?
I didn't even know he was actually there, to be honest. I mean, not like I've kept track on where he was, but I mean, the last I heard, he was in college somewhere.
I think he's been bandied about a few times, to be honest, since he was with us, because that was 4 years ago now. Because remember, he was the Cardinals head coach before Cliff Kingsbury came in and signed Kyler Murray. So it's 4 years ago, essentially, that he was with us. But I mean, the man's last attempt at head coaching, which was 1 year with us, ended up with something like, I think, a 3-13 record off the top of my head.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't pretty at all. And, you know, I mean, it's the Carolina Panthers. They can't really get much worse than where they are at the moment. So,
yeah, they really are having a poor year there, aren't they?
And I mean, I have seen as well, they are getting another ex-Cardinal in a major position, because Al Holcomb is taking over as the defensive coordinator.
Al did a bit better for us in his tenure, right?
I mean, he was part of the Wilkes, McCoy and Holcomb trio, so no, not really.
I just don't remember, like, talking about how it was McCoy was always the kind of our favourite target that year.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously it was another one where the defence was like the one keeping us in games, but the offence was just that bad. It was like, yeah, it was pointless at the end of the day.
Man, we really wasted some big talent in some of our receiving and running core that year, didn't we?
Yeah. And I mean, obviously this isn't a Carolina Panthers podcast. So I just thought, you know, we could bring it up just to reminisce about the bad old days.
Yeah. Well, there you go then. Kind of funny news to see Steve Wilkes at that, and I guess, you know, all the best to him because we're not playing the Panthers again this year.
It's a shame though, because we might have actually had it, not that, like, we didn't have a good chance anyway, but, you know, imagine how much of a bigger chance we'd have had he been the head coach.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, that was a game, the Panthers game, that we obviously came out of with a win, which was expected. And I guess we can move on to coming out of a game with a loss, which was also expected, but a scoreline that maybe wasn't as bad as a lot of people expected along the way.
Yeah, I mean, obviously another loss for the Cardinals to put them to 2-3 for the season. You know, get the pitchforks out, it's time to fire Cliff Kingsbury and all that shit again.
Well, you know, I think that the Cardinals were well within their rights to win that game, as we were playing it into the second half and everything like that. But the, you know, the performance and the expectation going in was hardly that we were going to win it in the first place. So I think to come out losing 17-20 against the high-flying Philadelphia Eagles was a pretty good place to be, really. I mean, the thing is we could have won it, and I think that's what's really disappointing. But ultimately, to be within 3 points and to have been in a position where we could have kept the game going, I think that's a pretty good outcome for this team this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, we did come into this game with a number of people out. Like you said before, you know, Matt Prater was out, Rodney Hudson was out, which meant we had to have Sean Harlow at court at centre. Why do I keep seeing C as corner? I don't know. I generally want to see these offensive linemen play corner, though.
Oh, that would be great. I'd love to see them just try and run the 40, to be honest, like just go for a sprint down the field.
Hudson was out, Max Garcia was out, Rashard Lawrence was out again, and also Trayvon Mullen, once again, hampered by injury. But we did have cornerback Antonio Hamilton back on the field for the first time this season.
Do you know, it's a slight tangent, but it's something that, you know, when you're kind of reading out all those injuries, and in a way, the Cardinals are very injury affected by stealth this year, because we've not got injuries to, you know, big stars. We've not got injuries to wide receivers and running backs, although we'll talk about that, and quarterbacks and things like that. But we do have injuries to a lot of, like, the support staff, if you like. We've got injuries, loads of injuries on the offensive line. Injured kickers, injured, you know, defensive line, all that stuff. And I think that that is, like, one of the things that might be hampering some of our performances, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say, you mentioned running back, and it was like, yeah, come the end of the game, that wasn't the case at all.
Yeah, well, we'll get onto that during the game recap for sure. But, you know, like, basically, coming into this game, that's a pretty banged-up team. Especially when you consider how much reshuffling that all required on the offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Harlow didn't have that bad of a game, I didn't think. I didn't notice any, like, errant snaps from him, or, like, he didn't seem to give up too much pressure up the middle. So, you know, in my eyes, that's a good game for the centre. Whether Pro Football Focus saw it that way, I don't know. I'm not seeing the numbers yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think... Again, like, center's obviously a hard one to say, and, like, it's something that's very frequently seen, right, is you see a backup center come in and then you see at least one really high snap or something odd like that. But, yeah, no, he seemed to have a pretty solid game. But, you know, equally, we know fine well just how much small tweaks to the offensive line can make a big effect on how effective they are as a unit.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's one of those things, like, we'd like, would obviously like to see a good offensive line stay healthy throughout the whole season, but that's just not possible. I mean, even if you look at our opponents, like they came in without their starting left tackle. I think they lost the centre for a couple of drives, and also the left guard went out injured. So, you know, they were just as beat up as us on the offensive line.
That's true, yeah, yeah. And they picked up a lot of their injuries during the game as well, which necessitates a, you know, an even faster turnaround on those changes.
But again, you know, like, we got into the game and, you know, cause a surprise, but it was another struggle for the Cardinals in the first half, or at least the first quarter, at least, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the first quarter and a bit. And, you know, I think, was it pretty much immediately gave up two touchdowns, right? It was almost two first quarter touchdowns, at least that's the way it felt.
Well, I mean, the first drive, we started on offense and went straight. Was it three and out? I think it was.
If it wasn't three and out, it was very, very quickly. I don't think we got into the Eagles' territory.
Oh, yeah, actually, yeah. So, first drive for us, punt. Second drive, well, first drive for Philadelphia. AJ Brown and Dallas Goedert just basically strolled up and down the field, put in an easy 7-0 lead as Jalen Hurts somehow plows it in from the one, because, you know, he's not that big of a guy, but I suppose he does have a massive offensive line behind, doesn't he?
Well, I mean, look at the fact that Dallas Goedert dragged him into the end zone the way he did. You know, it's like, I personally feel like that should have been Goddard's touchdown, mostly for fantasy reasons, but, you know, he carried the ball across the line. Just
so happened.
You didn't
need any help in fantasy football, though, did you?
Yeah, well, we'll come to that, I guess.
Yeah, and then obviously, second play drive for the Cardinals, first play, Kyler Murray decides, you know, fuck it, someone's got to be down there somewhere, throws it into double coverage looking for Hollywood Brown, and it's picked off.
Yeah, I mean, there was two of those plays this game, and it was really classic bad Kyler. You know, it was Kyler, the college star with absolutely elite wide receiver core, up against the smaller school, and they just know that he's going to get someone open down there somewhere, but... It seems to be like almost a bit of a staple that they try and go for one of these bombs on first down. And they tried it two or three times and it just wasn't going anywhere. It's like, what do you, you know, you can't keep trying that surprise bomb and then be, you know, shocked when it doesn't, you know, go off at all.
I mean, in all fairness with that pass, you know, had it had a little bit more on it, Marquise Brown could have been gone for a touchdown.
Very true, but actually I think that with the way that the cornerbacks were coming up underneath it, that they would have been able to be in the right place and right time to either knock the ball down or at least tackle Hollywood Brown straight away. You know, I don't think it was really a play that was on to much when you had two guys in as deep. I think it's cover seven when you've got them really deep like that. Two on one was just, it was never going to happen.
Yeah, but I mean, like, had it happened, then, you know, it would have been a heck of a play, but, you know, it just wasn't to be. And although the Cardinals didn't actually pay for it because the grass decided to tackle Jalen Hurts and force the Eagles into a punt.
Yep. Pretty much straight back at it. But, you know, again, I think that the main point is that this back and forth that's happening. Number one, the Eagles have gone pretty much straight away 7-0 up, but they're able to make stuff happen on the field. They're able to keep the ball moving this whole time, whereas the Cardinals just stuttering.
Yeah, and then the second quarter didn't really start off any better for the Cardinals because Jalen Hurts was able to get his second touchdown of the game. Again, another 1 yard QB sneak because we didn't see it coming last time. And then we didn't see it coming again that time.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's around about this time that the Cardinals start to wake up a little bit when they're 14 points down, which is really, you know, part of the broader point here, right, is like you think about, I mean, to be fair, the games we won, we started slowly as well. But you think about some of these games that we've lost and you think, well, if you could take a 14-point deficit off the board and either keep up with it or you know, at least make it not as bad a deficit. There's some of those games we could have turned into wins, this one notwithstanding.
Yeah, and I mean, like you say that, but the very next drive from the Cardinals, you know, they go down two scores. Immediately, they force a three and out and punting the ball back to the Eagles once again because nothing seemed to be going right on offense for us.
I mean, it's really hard to say because the whole offense just wasn't clicking at that point, but then it does click later. So you think it's not personnel, it must be play calls, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we needed some spark to come from somewhere, and fortunately we got that from the defensive side of the ball.
Yep, absolutely. Solid defensive play, and it wasn't just a lucky interception, it was an earned one.
I mean, we thought it was an interception, but then it went to a replay, and, you know, it was. I think the ball touched the ground, didn't it? So it wasn't an interception from Jalen Thompson.
Oh,
it would have been
yeah.
one heck of an interception.
Yeah, I remember now. I remember the play.
And then, of course, Zach Allen gets to Jalen Hurts eventually, you know, after he does a bit of a Kyler Murray impression dancing around in the backfield.
I was very sad about this Zach Allen sack because it looks like he didn't do the dance.
I think he did. I mean, at least I put the gif of it on Twitter, so he did it there, at least.
Yeah, I don't think he... excuse me. I don't think that he was shown on TV at least doing it, which is a shame. But still, it continues a really good run of form for Zach Allen with, again, another pass defended at the line there. I think there was a second one at some point in the game and obviously a sack as well. Guy's just really playing very well, coming into his own. Again, we talked about it last week, but another classic contract year moment.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we haven't yet extended him, but surely that won't be too much longer before they do.
Yeah, you'd imagine this is one you're going to want to get locked down, right? Especially with, you know, your other kind of star in that area being JJ Watt, who is, I don't know, I always feel like he's any given snap away from a career-ending injury.
But I mean, so is anyone really, if you look at it in the most saddened, thingy way.
Very true, but... Watt definitely has a bit of a track record in that regard.
And I suppose someone else who does want to get paid this offseason will be Hollywood Brown, who had two exceptional grabs on the next Cardinals drive, including one that went for a touchdown again.
Yeah.
Another one for its highlight reel, which is growing with every single passing week.
Yeah, two big highlight plays and... you know, just really kind of making stuff happen out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, he had one heck of a catch, and then he just decided to take a short pass from Kyler Murray, dodge it between a couple of Eagles, and then just use his ridiculous speed for a 25-yard score and into the end zone to make it 14-7 to the Eagles.
Yeah, I mean, and like, again, what a play, but really the thing that it did for his best was not just... You know, it was putting points on the board and getting momentum.
Yeah, because it's definitely something, you know, like we do seem to lack first thing in the game. But, you know, when it does come, you know, it's just unstoppable almost. It's just a shame, you know, they're not doing it consistently. Because if they were, we wouldn't be 2-3, would we? We'd be like 3-2, maybe better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the very least, you could at the very least say that this game would have been the one, right? We can say that for sure because we lost it only by 3 points. And you think about some of the other games we've lost, maybe not the Rams, maybe not the Chiefs, but at least it would have been closer games.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, make it 3-2, you know, we can't be too greedy, can we, with the Cardinals after all?
No, well, exactly. But yeah, obviously getting that in... was a fairly quick turnaround, I believe, again after that for the Eagles' possession.
Yeah, it was pretty much, you know, getting straight to Jalen Hurts. JJ Watt, I think, got to him, and it almost could have been like a fumble. And had it been a fumble, Zaven Collins would have scooped it up and picked up a touchdown, but it wasn't to be. I think it was an incomplete pass.
Yeah, these things are always hard to call, but you know, ultimately the point is that it gets them off the field really, really quickly, and puts the Cardinals in a position to go into the break with a draw.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, we did have the decision from the Cardinals to go for the fake punt, in between all that.
Yeah. Oh, the fake punt was a brilliant, brilliant play. It really pulled off well as well. And I think it's a great field position to have done a fake punt from.
I think we were still in our own like area though. So, you know, had it backfired, then, you know, we could have been like 21-7 down going into the break.
We were still in our own half, but, you know, only just really, if I remember rightly, I think we're on about 40 or thereabouts. And, you know, that makes it like, slightly unexpected place to do it from. It gets pulled off really well and you get to keep the football, but if you don't do it, you don't immediately put them in scoring range, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, we did eventually get on the score sheet again before the break with a short field goal from Matt Amendola. You know, he did manage to hit one, didn't he? But, you know,
he did.
And
he
we'll talk about the other one shortly, but you know, how can he manage?
Yeah,
it's not his fault they recorded to Justin Pugh.
Yeah, well, save yourself for a bit. Save yourself. Yeah, you know, I think obviously hits their short field goal. That puts us into the break only 4 points down, which I think is a huge turnaround. Well, it is a huge turnaround from where we were looking at even earlier in that quarter. And, you know, once you kind of know that you can score points, I think it takes away a lot of the, like, mental barrier to it as well, means you can come out. The one downside, of course, being that the Eagles were to receive receive first in the second half.
Yeah, but I mean, let's see. Yeah, so we got into the second half now, and you know, the Eagles started again really strong on offense, but the Cardinals defense woke up, limited in them to just a field goal. I think they also had a backup kicker, didn't they? Because their usual guy was injured.
Yeah, they had a backup kicker as well. But I think, yeah, limiting them to a field goal here. I mean, or we can talk about it more generally as well, but limiting the Eagles overall in the second half to two field goals instead of two touchdowns. Pretty big improvement on the defensive side there as well.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the defense was strong throughout the entire game. You know, just another one of them ones.
I guess maybe like you would call it sort of red zone defense specifically, because against the defense overall wasn't, you know, letting them hold on to the ball for too long. It wasn't letting them score on every drive, not by a long shot. And in fact, it was more often keeping them out of the red zone than it was letting them in there. But then obviously in the first half, when they got to the red zone, they were giving up touchdowns. In the second half, when they got to the red zone, they were only giving up field goals.
Yeah, I mean, the third quarter, there wasn't really that much to talk about from it. Like, we had a couple of nice plays from Rondale Moore, for once getting positive yards. And we had Kyler Murray doing his dancing in the backfield before finding AJ Green on the sidelines for a nice game.
Oh, that was a cracking catch by AJ Green, wasn't it? Tiptoes down the edge.
Yeah, I mean, he can manage to do that, yet he can't turn around against Green Bay last year.
Yeah, well, there you go. Maybe this one, it's because Kyler had time in the pocket and the offensive line didn't immediately collapse.
Yeah, I mean, we did also have a near special teams turnover when Christian Mathieu ran down the field and forced a fumble, unfortunately that fell to another Eagle. But, you know, had that been a Cardinal on the other end of it, you know, immediate red zone possession, Scott Hansen would have been going crazy.
Yeah, it's a great play all round, really great hustle. But yeah, ultimately not much in a way. If you talk about specifically in the third quarter, is that not when James Connor was injured though?
Possibly, because I mean, like, the running backs just dropping like flies because Jonathan Ward got injured sometime during the game. James Connor, like you say, he went out with an injury. And then backup Darrell Williams also went down with an injury. So basically, the running back room was basically Eno Benjamin and Kyler Murray.
I got to say, Eno Benjamin did really well with it in the end. You know, ended up being the sort of sole running back there. But yeah, and Kyler Murray actually really just wasn't rushing much till that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, like, you've always seen the stat, you know, like, if Kyler Murray doesn't run for X amount of yards, then the Cardinals don't win. Yeah, but when he rushes for so many yards, I think they got, like, a really strong record. Is it I'm not going to say they're unbeaten because they're probably not unbeaten, but
it's not unbeaten, but it's something like he's got about a point three record when he runs over that certain number, and he's got like a 0.8 record when he does run over it. You know, it's like a good dividing line for him getting the offense going, I guess.
This is what happens when we don't do any research, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. Well, anyway, point being is that he's not running at that point, which is not usually a good sign for the Cardinals offense. He does get running a little bit later on, including a slide that angered quite a few people. But
we'll get to break that down, you know, shortly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, I have my opinions of it. You probably have yours. Twitter has their countless millions of opinions.
Absolutely. Well, I think to kind of get us on to that fourth quarter, we're going to sum up the third quarter with excellent work to not let them score. I think we could have done a little bit better and been a little bit more aggressive on offense. But again, with all of the injuries that we were having at that point, it understandably stalls drives.
Yeah, I mean, also Hassan Reddick, former Cardinal, he got a sack of Kyler Murray
in the first quarter.
And then he didn't really celebrate it.
I saw somebody describing it somewhere as the inevitable Hassan Reddick sack, and that's definitely how it felt.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't really do too much outside of that, but, you know, it's a sack for him. You know, well done, I suppose. You know, it's what happens when you use him where he should be used, not trying to turn him into a linebacker like we
absolutely.
Did.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Again, you know, another former Cardinals draft pick who didn't have a great time here and then goes elsewhere and becomes much more efficient.
There's hope for Andy Isabella yet, then. That's what you're basically saying, isn't
exactly.
It?
Yes, exactly. I'm saying that somewhere Andy Isabella is going to flourish.
But yeah, you know, like you say, we were down to just Eno Benjamin and Kyler Murray with his legs rushing the ball, and eventually it was Eno Benjamin who found a touchdown to tie the game up against, you know, too much people's shock because, you know, 17-all, no one really saw us being that close at all, did they?
Yeah, again, it's something we've actually not touched on, really, but, like, the going into this game, you know, the Eagles are undefeated. They are the last undefeated team in the NFL, and people are talking about them as though they're already NFC champions.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's won, like, a Super Bowl in the month of October, have yet, so there's still way too much football to go. I mean, like, Jalen Hurts goes down with an injury, and they're pretty much screwed, I'd assume.
Well, look what happened with us last year, right? You know, we were in that exact same position last year, and then we all started to fall apart after that point. But, point being that, you know, they come into this game, and really nobody expects the Cardinals to be able to do anything particularly, you know, useful against them. But they come out with, at this point in the game, drawing.
Yeah, but I mean, that next drive for the Eagles, you know, just did what the Eagles seemed to be able to do better than most teams, and that was just control the clock and, you know, make it all the way down the field into a field goal range, you know, after just basically, I think we ran the ball.
Yeah.
It was like 8 plays in a row just to like keep the clock going and, you know, give the Cardinals very little time left. You know, were they able to stop them?
Exactly. It just was no time at all left on the clock, and it really was a beautifully controlled drive that they put together for it. Again, you know, high pressure kick, but great stop by the defense there as well, because letting them get a score out of that would have really, really sealed the game up. You know, it would have put it in to be a 2-score game. It would have needed the Cardinals to get a touchdown as well, whereas at that point we kind of forced them to take a kick and give it 3 points, and that means the Cardinals only have to drive into field goal range to be able to tie it up.
But what is Matt Amendola's field goal range? Nobody knows.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I mean,
and on top of
before we go on to that, though, you know, like the Eagles were driving, there was a time when they were 3rd and 12, you know, and had we got that stop, that would have been so much different to the game, you know, completely different outcome.
Well, I really do think at this point, you know, we're into that witching hour of the game where there's, you know, any number of things that could go differently. And two teams that are tied that deep into the fourth quarter, it can just go any way and in so many different methods, you could get so many different outcomes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they scored the field goal to make it 20-17, giving Kyler Murray and the Cardinals 1 minute and 45 seconds to basically go the entire length of the field.
Or, and I believe, you know, no timeouts at that point, right? Or was it one timeout?
No, they had no timeouts left because they did have to burn one when a player got in. Was it Jalen Thompson and Byron Murphy? Both of them collided with each other.
Which was also, by the way, very nearly a turnover.
I know. It's just
when they collided. So, you know, again, like you want to talk about things that might change the course of the game. Get a turnover there. They never score. Even if the Cardinals never score again, you force overtime. You stop them at 3-12, you force overtime. You know, there's so many different ways this could have gone. But ultimately, yeah, you're right. The Cardinals get the ball back 1 minute 45, no timeouts. That is a tricky ask of any offensive coordinator to get the ball down there. But it's also something that's practiced, right? You do 2 minute drills for a reason.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, had Kyler Murray hit Zach Ertz for like a 30-yard gain really early in that drive, maybe what happened wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, well, exactly. Zach Ertz not quite able to hang on to it. It was a
I think it was a bit out of his range, though, to be honest.
Well, no, I think it was within his range, but I think if there hadn't been a defender there for him to hit his arms off of when he's swinging round, the ball doesn't come loose. And that's, you know, that's just football, right? Like, that's a defender putting himself in the right place at the right time.
No, I mean, I think on that one, where it was 30 yards, I think that was down the sideline, so Kyler just overthrew it.
Oh, it was,
and it sailed out of bounds. But then, like, the very next play, he hits Ertz for the first down. So he's quickly bounced back. But again, that gets the clock moving, doesn't it? Because he's still in the field of play.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you just kind of keep going. You keep going down. You get your snaps off quickly when you can. And ultimately, we're then left in a position where the Cardinals have 40-ish yards left to drive. And should we talk about the infamous run and slide?
I mean, we probably should, before we do, highlight the fact that Hollywood Brown made another first down catch. Because we haven't actually named who is our British Birmingham Breakdown player of the game from this game.
That's a good point, actually. Do you want to reveal that?
I mean, I did just mention who it was. It was Hollywood Brown.
Yeah, unsurprisingly, like a couple of big theatrical catches, shall we say. Just, yeah, really well done.
I mean, it was the closest vote that we've had so far this year.
All right, who was in second place?
So, I mean, there was four choices, as always. So, Isaiah Simmons had 8%. Byron Murphy finished with 21%. Eno Benjamin had 31%. And Hollywood Brown won with 39%.
That's pretty, like, that's a bit more of a spread than we usually get. But I do think Eno Benjamin in is an interesting choice.
I mean, Eno Benjamin's a fan favourite, isn't he, still? So, yeah, anytime Eno Benjamin's there to be voted on, people just vote for him anyway.
Yeah, well, he did also step up under not ideal circumstances, so there's
and
always
he scored
that,
a touchdown as well. Can't forget that.
Oh. And he scored a touchdown. Yeah. So yeah, I suppose there's that, which is not to be overlooked. Well deserved by Hollywood Brown. Couple big clutch catches. Obviously, brilliant touchdown. Absolutely fantastic touchdown. Making something out of nothing with that one, but
and now he's a two-time Player of the Week award winner, the first of the season to win two of them.
Yeah, there you go. After five games,
yeah. I mean, it's probably not that much of an achievement, but we'll just mention it anyway because it just delays talking about what happened.
Yeah, well, you know what did happen is Cardinals get down. They're running out of downs. I think it was it third? It was second down.
Yes.
Yeah. So first down was an incomplete pass, I believe.
Yeah. First down, he didn't manage to get anything from it. Second down, Kyler Murray runs with the ball and, you know, slides with it. And, you know, this stupid NFL rule where wherever he starts his slide is where the ball needs to be placed. Which, I mean, I don't understand that rule whatsoever. It should be where he's touched down.
The thing is like the you know, the placing of the ball is such an inexact science anyway. And, you know, ultimately, I think that they could have so easily placed the ball another couple inches forward and given him that first down as well. You know, it's almost just as much as the judgment of the referees as of Kyler. That being said, he did have space to get a bit further and make that slide and get it first down.
I mean, the stadium announcer did call it a first down, make of that what you will.
Didn't the commentary team call it a first down as well?
I don't know, but it definitely said it, like it all changed in the stadium apparently, so it was like signaled for a first down.
Yeah, it put it this way, it was very, very close either way. I know people are going absolutely nuts about it, but I think people would have been going absolutely nuts about it as well if he'd gone in and injured himself for the rest of the season, you know?
I mean, yeah, Kyler Murray can't win anyway with most people. It's like, I mean, I understand why he did it, and then obviously clock was ticking. I think it was like 20-odd seconds left. And people were saying, why didn't he line up for another play? But it's like, what if he gets sacked and, you know, that's a running clock?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Then you're having to rush the kicker out, aren't you, on like fourth down, maybe with like seconds left for like everyone to get lined up, you know? So you have to spike it there, really. Otherwise,
I think also, you know, in a lot of circumstances, a lot of situations, if something doesn't go the way you expect it to in a 2-minute drill, spiking on the third down is actually quite often a really good idea because it allows you just a few more seconds to actually think through what you want to do.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I mean, then people are saying, you know, it was third and one when he spikes the ball, making it fourth and one. People are saying, yeah, well, Cliff Kingsbury should have gone for it there. And it's like, with 20-odd seconds on the clock and no timeouts to get 1 yard. What sort of play call is going to be done for that? You're that close into the red zone, aren't you? Like, Eagles could jump on any sort of pass, you know. If you're going to run the ball,
they would just blitz them. You know, like you can't run it, right? You can't run that because if you run it, you keep the clock going. And then you've picked up a yard and then you need to spike it and then you need to kick it anyway. The only play that's beneficial from that point is to go for it, to go for a touchdown. But if you go for a touchdown, you know, like you got to wait for things to develop and all of that stuff. And all of a sudden you're running out of time again. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a good, it seems to me like the best thing is to stop the clock and bring out the kicker.
Well, I mean, yeah, exactly. And it was like, was it 39, 40 yards? Like, this is the NFL. This is like the pinnacle of American football. And if you're a kicker, you should definitely be able to make a 40-yard field goal. Otherwise, you're not going to be employed, are you?
Well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, ultimately, long story short, you know, he comes out, the poor guy, and sticks it wide right. And essentially, that's it. That's it. Game over. You know, the ball turns over on downs, the Eagles take it, kneel it out, and there is ball game at 20-17. When, you know, if it goes through, obviously it goes into extra time, more or less, is thinking.
Yeah, I mean, over time, like, we'd have hated it over here because it would have been like, what, 11:30, midnight sort of thing, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I was already, like, I was already very tired by the time the game ended anyway, but.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you say, had it been 2020, that wouldn't have been too, like, that'd have been a fair outcome because, you know, this was the undefeated Philadelphia Eagles who were playing. And, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say they're the best team in the NFC because I didn't think that much of them. Like, we kept AJ Brown pretty quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, looking at the statistics once again, I retweeted it earlier. So,
AJ Brown had 3 receptions for 32 yards.
Exactly.
So that's not much. I mean, even Dallas Goedert he had 8 receptions for 95 yards, and Devonta Smith 10 receptions for 87 yards. So, you know, that's like a big game for the two of those guys in a way, but we kept every individual member of that offense below 100 yard games.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you look at the past few weeks, like, Devontae Adams had 2 catches for 12 yards, Cooper Kupp 4 for 47, Christian McCaffrey rushed for 27 yards, and now AJ Brown 3 for 32. It's like, Vance Joseph is doing something right there if he's able to keep, like, the offense's, like,
the star players,
guys, yeah. Like, keeping them that quiet, you know. I mean, other people should step up in, like, they have done, like you said, with Goddard and Devonta Smith. I mean, even Miles Sanders and their running backs didn't have too much joy throughout the game. And neither did Jalen Hurts, really, if you think about like how he's been playing.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Like, both him and Miles Sanders had 15 carries apiece, and both of them came out with approximately 60 yards. So, you know, that's not a huge amount of rushing yards.
Yeah, we kept it closer than, like, literally anyone anticipated. I mean, personally, I put down the Cardinals for a win, but, like I say, I always do that, so.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we're talking about it last week, and I predicted the Cardinals for a loss. In fact, I think I predicted them for a loss only just. I was saying, look, if we can keep in it at all, then that's a good thing. And, you know, here we were with chances to win it. A couple things go differently, we win it. We definitely had a big chance to go into overtime, and sure, things didn't work out that way, but, you know, finishing 20-17, especially after the start we had, I think it's a pretty good outcome, really.
Yeah, I mean, we'll take the moral victory, won't we? It's all we have sometimes.
This is the point in the season when you've got a bit more of an idea. You know what you've got for this season, right? And we know that we're not on a Super Bowl run here. We're not on a historically good season for the Cardinals. But if we've got a good enough team to hold this team, this Eagles team, who are, you know, definitely looking like they've got a postseason written all over them at the moment, if we can hold them to a game like this, then we can win other games, then we can have, you know, we can have a good season out of this.
Yeah, I mean, you say we're not Super Bowl contenders, but, you know, I feel like if we do put it together, you know, we will get some really good results come, like, the second part of the season when we're, like, hopefully back to full health, because only one more game before we get some guy called DeAndre Hopkins back, which, yep, you know, our offense will love having him. And Marquise Brown and everyone else on the, like, basically offensive side of the ball, if the running backs survive that long, that is.
Yeah, I mean, it could definitely be a bit of a different Cardinals team, you know, in a couple of weeks when we see that. And again, it's a really not insubstantial amount of talent that we've got already.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, things just keep getting better. Like, you know, if we manage to sort out this really slow start on the offensive side of the ball, you know, we're going to be scoring a lot more points than we are at the moment. We're going to be, like, putting up yards. And, you know, like, the defense won't be on the field as much. And maybe they manage to take a step up, even though they're just playing, like, lights-out football most of the time.
Yeah, yeah, they're playing really well in general. And, you know, I think it's about time that we started rewarding that with some wins as well.
It puts some respect on Vance Joseph's name as well.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, you know, definitely disappointing. And, you know, we saw obviously some pretty poor treatment of the kicker after the game, understandably at that point. Well, not understandably, it was, it's dreadful to treat people that way, but, like, it's normal. And we saw some of the reporters being called out for it.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the Justin Pugh video this morning, and it's like, I mean, you can understand where he was coming from, but again, a guy like Matt Amendola, he's going to be on the streets again before long because,
yeah,
you know, well, he's not going to be, like, hopefully Matt Prater's injury isn't serious, because if it is, then we're going to have to look for another kicker again. But I mean, I don't think we'll bring back Amendola. Well, not at all.
My guess is that if Prater's injury was that serious, there's a lot of veteran kickers out and about who would come in and do a fine job. And I suspect that they would probably have gone out and got one of those guys because the veteran kicker strategy has worked for them.
Yeah, but I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, who's available at such short notice? And sadly, was the guy.
Well, you know, I've seen kickers have worse games. And I think Justin Pugh's point still stands that, you know, they put him in that situation in the first place. And they shouldn't have, you know, like they should have been able to get the turnover. Pugh was saying there that he missed his block on the same play and, you know, that caused things and all of that stuff, which I think is quite big of him to, you know, go up there and say that way. But yeah, a disappointing way for the game to end for sure.
Yeah, and they have to bounce back next week against the Seattle Seahawks team, which isn't as bad as everyone seemed to make out this season.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, the Seahawks, fresh from some bizarre games that they've had, obviously gonna be a bit more of an interesting game than we first thought it was going to be.
Yeah, but before we get on to talking about that, we do have fantasy football, but I don't really want to talk about one part of that.
Well, do you want to give us your Bird Gang Bowl updates first?
Yeah, well, I mean, Bird Gang Bowl, I was up against the 4-0 team in the league. What was their name called? Full Wattage. They were 4-0 coming into this week. And thanks to Gabe Davis scoring like a 98-yard touchdown on the first play of the game, I ended up winning 153 to 143 to take his 0 and make myself 3-2 in that league. So, you know, I've still got a chance.
That's a pretty good spot to be in. Meanwhile, going into Monday Night Football in Bird Gang Bowl, I am down 99.62 points to 100.96 points, so a little over a point. Unfortunately, all of my players have played, and he's still got a few to go, including Travis Kelce for one. So I think that regardless of how that all gets adjusted, I am out of there. That being said, I did have a better week in the Dynasty League.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't. But, you know, it was me playing against you. And it looks like, barring some kind of miracle, I will be 1-4 in that league this week, this year. And you will be 2-3.
2-3, yeah. Current score is 161.78 to 148.66, so a little over 13 points in it. I've still got George Karlaftis to play, and you've still got one of the Raiders' defensive backs, right?
Yeah, Divine Diablo, which, I mean, is Spanish for devil, so maybe that means something. I don't know.
I can't imagine there'll be a 13-point swing there, but I think you'll get closer than the 13 points anyway.
I mean, what doesn't help is the fact that last week I kept Jared Goff on the bench and he scored 33.2 points.
Yeah, had a huge game.
And obviously TJ Hockenson had his ridiculous scoreline of like, was it 39.9 points. But this week, the pair of them combined for about 6 points, whereas I left guys like, I suppose if I put Marcus Mariota in, we would at least be level now going into Monday Night Football. And then it would have been down to the two defensive players to basically decide the game.
Just a really tough, like, missing something by a week, right?
I know. I mean, I was considering Matt Stafford, and he only scored 8 points as well, so I still would have been much better off with him, so...
There were some pretty poor quarterback performances this week. I've got Russell Wilson sitting on the bench of another league over there, and it doesn't make for pretty viewing, put it that way.
I know, it's just one of those things, isn't it? Fantasy, it's like, some weeks it's your week, other weeks it's like, it's not.
Yeah, you just don't know, right? Anyway, so that is fantasy for the week. How did you get on in the pick'ems?
Dreadful. I was just having a look now and I've got 7 points.
Whoa.
I know.
That's a bit of a swing then, because I picked up 11 so far this week, with Monday Night Football still to go. which puts me on to 44 total points.
Yeah, well, I mean, my losers I picked this week, I had the Broncos, Packers, Jaguars, Lions, Seahawks. Why did I pick the Seahawks? Cardinals, obviously, massive homer. And I also went for the Rams and the Bengals. It's just so much red on my screen now.
I overlap with you for some losers there as well, because I took the Bengals over the Ravens. I thought they could do that. I took the Lions over the Patriots after they had a really high-scoring game. I took the Jaguars over the Texans because the Texans are dreadful. And I took the Broncos over the Colts. But that game, I mean, that I think they both lost in that game, really. The real losers of that game were anybody who watched it.
Which one? The Thursday Night Football? Yeah. It was dreadful.
It really was truly, truly something specially awful.
And apparently there was highlights from it, but I doubt that. I doubt that very much.
Yeah, I can't imagine anything that could be considered an actual highlight in that regard, but there you go. Coming up for something which is very much not a highlight on our usual calendar is a game against the Seahawks.
I don't know. I mean, you know, sometimes we have a good game against Seattle in Seattle. Other times we don't. This is one. Yeah. It's Seattle this week.
It is Seattle this week. And again, sort of historical run of form. It's starting to break up over the past few years, but historical run of form for a while is we win in Seattle and they win in Arizona. But usually the Seattle game is sometime in November, and the game in Arizona is usually earlier in the season than this one. So it'll be interesting to see how this turns out. But very much a significantly different Seahawks team than the one that we faced last time around.
Yeah, I mean, there's no such thing as Russell Wilson anymore. He's cooking elsewhere, isn't he? Or not, as it was.
Yeah, he's moved his kitchen down to Denver and made a right pig's breakfast of it, from what I can see so far. But the first non-Russell Wilson quarterbacked Seahawks that the Cardinals have played in some time. I'm trying to think when he was drafted, but you know, it's 10 plus years.
I'm trying to think, who was it before? Was it maybe Matt Flynn, possibly? That's going back a few years.
I'm going to Google it. Seahawks.
Or if we had like...
It was Matt Hasselbeck.
No, it was before. It was between... I'm sure after him it was Matt Flynn. And I think we might have played... what's his name? Is it... Not Tyrod. Tyrod Taylor or something like that? Don't know if it's him or not. Or no, Tavarius Jackson.
Tavarius Jackson and the backup, clipboard Jesus himself, Charlie Whitehurst.
Yeah, I was going to say, remember these names just because, you know, Seattle, isn't it? But, yeah, I mean, this year they're helmed by some guy called Geno Smith, who, you know, came some... It was like, I don't know, just seemed to go weird in the New York, didn't it, before him? Because, like, some games he had, like, really good games. Other games he was, like, a walking meme.
Yeah, I do think a lot of Geno Smith's poor games at the Jets were actually kind of less to do with Geno Smith and more to do with the Jets. Had been playing since 2013, 2014 has Geno Smith, and hardly put himself out as one of the kind of better guys in the NFL, I think. He has had one season with a 500 record, and that is it. That's the only season he played a full season, and that was in 2013 with the Jets.
And yet now here he is leading the Seattle Seahawks to a 2-3 record. I suppose we shouldn't take the piss because we're also on a 2-3 record.
Yeah, I'm just looking at his career here just quickly to sort of illustrate it. 2013, he's drafted to the Jets. Comes out with an 8-8 record. 2014, he has a 3-10 record. 2015, he doesn't play any full games. 2016, 1-0 record. 2017, moves to the Giants, 0-1 record. The next three seasons, he doesn't play any full games. He plays with the Chargers for a couple of snaps, for one completion for four attempts. In 2019, he goes to Seattle and doesn't play a single snap. 2020, plays five snaps and makes four completions. 2021, 1-2 record. 2022, 2-3 record. So arguably this is one of his better seasons of the last 10 years, pretty much, so far.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's been there for a while now, hasn't he? And obviously, after the trade for Russell Wilson to go to Denver, he did bring in Drew Lock, but then he got COVID in the preseason, and since then it just seems to have been Geno Smith's job, and they haven't really seen any reason to change back because, you know, they're putting up points this year.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, they may be 3-2, but they're outscoring the Cardinals by a significant margin in that 3-2.
Well, I mean, you look at the last three games, they've lost to the Falcons 27-23. Then they lost to the Detroit Lions 4. No, they actually beat the Lions 48-45, which was a scorigami as well.
Yeah, well, it must be up there close to one of the highest scoring games in the modern era, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, not quite to the levels of, was it the Rams and the Chiefs a couple of years back when that insane game?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then yesterday, they lost 39-32 to the New Orleans Saints, who we end up playing next week after we play Seattle.
A little bit of a round robin. But yeah, Seattle, obviously the team in front of us just now. A team that we know can get in and score a lot of points. They've got a surprisingly efficient offense, given that they've kind of got no big names on it, really.
I mean, people would not like you saying that when they've got DK Metcalf, who we could have had instead of Andy Isabella, that they like to keep reminding us.
Although I would say Andy Isabella has never yet, never mind this season, but he's never yet been carted off the field to go to the bathroom the same way that DK Metcalf has.
I suppose he's always got that for him, hasn't it? Yeah, that's the exactly. One thing he has over DK Metcalf.
But yeah, I mean, like, I don't want to say it as though they've got nobody, they've got no weapons at all. Obviously, DK Metcalf.
And he's still got Tyler Lockett there as well. He always causes us issues.
Rashad Penny and, at least in theory, Kenneth Walker, both really, really good running backs.
Well, I mean, they haven't got Rashad Penny because yesterday he broke his leg.
Oh, did he? I didn't even hear about that.
Yeah, and I saw it this morning. Like, he, obviously, they were carting him off and he brought in Kenneth Walker and he scored his first touchdown, so... Yeah, I think it's pretty much his backfield now the rest of the season, which is good news for your fantasy team, I suppose. Yeah,
good news for my fantasy team, indeed. I think he was my first round selection for this year. So, they're an offense that can clearly get stuff done regardless, and they can score well against good opponents. You know, the Saints are not really anything to be sniffing at the moment, and they put up some good points there. Put up some incredible points against the Lions. So I think, you know, really, if you're talking about game plans, this one versus Seattle, you're talking about needing to score. And that includes scoring in the first quarter as well. Cardinals still the only team in the NFL yet to score in the first quarter at all.
I mean, I don't know if that's something we should be proud of or, you know, like, I mean, obviously you're not going to be proud of not scoring, but impressed, I suppose. It's like, how have they managed that?
How they managed to be 2-3 coming out of that, I don't know. But, you know, ultimately, if you're only given three quarters of the game worth of scoring, then you're hamstringing yourself, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, the three quarters have been, like, really good for most of the time. So it's just like, can you put that fourth quarter, well, the first quarter together as well? And, you know, actually put together a complete game and destroy the Seahawks. Hopefully they can.
It's something that I'd really like to see. You know, I think, they may not be our biggest rival these days, but they're still definitely one that I'd love to beat.
Yeah, especially in Seattle, you know, beat them in the backyard. And, you know, I think they are down. Like I say, they're not the Seattle Seahawks of old, like we've seen, you know, like, they've beaten us badly in that stadium. Not that, like, we remember that game, but apparently it happened.
Well, I mean, there's been a couple of years within the last 10-ish years that they, do you remember there was a run of form that they had when they were just in the Super Bowl all the time and they were just winning everything? They were, you know, playing extremely well. And we had to play them twice a year through all of that. So, you know, always a tricky one for me to get into the mindset, I guess, of going to play the Seahawks.
I'm trying to think who they've got on a defensive side of the ball that we should be, like, worried about because Bobby Wagner's gone. I think Jamal Adams is injured. So,
I'm just having a look through their...
I mean, they've got a good cornerback. Wooten, I think his name is. You know, he's been playing well this season as a rookie. So, might see his name mentioned quite a bit.
I think ultimately, you know, they've got good players on there, just maybe not any sort of big names. In a lot of the ways that Cardinals teams have been built in the past few years, you know, just solid guys, but not any big names. Then again, you know, ultimately we're talking about how much this team is scoring, and yet they're 2-3, which means that they're giving up a lot of scores as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, they were on red zone quite a bit this past week when they were playing the Saints, obviously, because of how many points were scored. But, like, Tyson Hill scored, was it 3 rushing touchdowns and a passing touchdown? So,
yeah,
that's, you know, players can score big points on them. Hopefully we can join the club and hopefully stop them from scoring on us.
I think as well this would be a great opportunity for the Cardinals to try a bit of a laboratory as well if they are a bit of a softer defense. You know, trying out a few different things and especially trying to get, I've said it several times, I've said it too many times already, trying to get going early in the game.
It's all we want. It's a first quarter. Like a first quarter score, you know, we'll take any kind of score, whether it's like a safety, we'll take a field goal.
Yeah. Just get points on the board before 15 minutes expires and, you know, hopefully we'll have a better chance of winning it. Ultimately, I think I do go into this game with a fair amount of confidence that it's a winnable game for the Cardinals.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, like, we do win this one, then we're 3-3. Before DeAndre Hopkins comes back, and, you know, I'm pretty sure no one would have said, like, they wouldn't have turned that down at the start of the season, would they, after that news came out?
No, absolutely not. But I, you know, winning it and going 3-3, that sounds okay. 3-500, that sounds okay. But 2-4, that starts to be a scary number, you know.
Yeah, but let's not talk about that. Let's just predict Cardinals wins and get out of here.
That sounds good to me. What do you reckon? I'm thinking I'm going to go towards a higher score here.
I'm going to go for the Cardinals to win 33-17.
Okay. I think I'm going to give the Seahawks 17 as well, but I'm only going to give the Cardinals 31.
Okay. I mean, it's still a win, isn't it? It's a 2-score win.
Yeah.
It'll keep Geno Smith quiet and it'll hopefully, like, push Cliff Kingsbury's odds to be the next head coach fired out a bit because he's currently the bookies' favourite, even though it makes zero sense whatsoever.
I want to bet against that or something like that. I don't know, because I just can't see it happening. I really couldn't under... I'm not getting into it. I am not getting into that today. Instead, I'm going to say that we will be back next week to break down the Cardinals and the Seahawks, hopefully, with a Cardinals team that has a 500 record again and a Seahawks team running away with their tails between their legs.
Yeah, and we can also celebrate the return of DeAndre Hopkins. But before we do that, you know, make sure you go follow us on Twitter at British Bird Gang. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/British Bird Gang. And join the group at facebook.com/groups/British Bird Gang. Buy British Bird Gang merch at britishbirdgang.tml.com. And of course, if you like what you listen to on the podcast, then leave us a review wherever it is you get your podcast from. It always helps, any sort of 5-star rating. Yes. Not that anyone takes any notice to this because, you know, you probably skipped the episode by now and, you know, they're off listening to some other NFL podcast which isn't as good as ours.
Once again, let us know if you hear these bits. It would be quite funny to know if you could hear these bits.
We should put a secret code word in, shouldn't we? Like
a bounty or something, yeah.
But yeah, as always, you know, thanks for listening to the podcast and we'll see you again next week for another episode of the British Bird Gang Breakdown.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and see you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.